And at 7 p.m. in Patchogue at Fatalee's Deli Pub, it's the Be-In Holiday Party Fundraiser for WUSB with Kerry Carney, Professor Rub-A-Dub and the Love Drops, Free Grass Union, and more. And if you're a local venue, band, or promoter and you want to get your gigs on the concert billboard, send an email to Scene, that's S-C-E-N-E, at WUSB.FM. And as always, thanks for listening to the Concert Billboard right here on WUSB Stony Brook.
Yes, and we want to thank you for listening to WUSB Stony Brook in general, where it's 1 minute after 6 o'clock and time once again for Off the Wall. Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. We have an abbreviated show tonight because we have a basketball game coming up at 6:45. I believe there's some ass-kicking to be had tonight. I think, what, Fordham is going to be the victim of Stony Brook? Is that how it's going to read? Yeah, well, you know, these kinds of things happen. I think, and it's just me speaking, I'm not representing the opinions of the staff or management here at WUSB or any officials at the State University of New York at Stony Brook, county, state, national officials, and anybody like that, or anybody else, to be honest. But I think that the Stony Brook Seawolves, the basketball team, in fact, all the teams are named the Seawolves, I don't know why that is. Why does every team have to be named the same thing? I'm sorry, I'm just asking questions again. I always get in trouble for asking the questions that no one else wants to ask. But why is it that on a college campus, every single sport has to have the same nickname? You know, I mean, it's not that way. You have the New York Mets, and then you have the New York Jets. Then you have the New York Nets. You know, the different consonant is how we know what sport it is. But if we say the Seawolves, you know, we've been through the whole thing about what a Seawolf is, and nobody seems to know. But when you say the Seawolves are playing tonight, or the Seawolves are really good, or the Seawolves really blew it this year, you don't know what sport you're talking about. So you have to extend the conversation even longer to explain yourself. So that's my question. Why can't we have different nicknames? I remember when the team here used to be known as the Stony Brook Patriots. Yeah. And in fact, I went to Ward Melville High School, which is in Setauket, the town next door to us, and their team was also called the Patriots. In fact, they're still called the Patriots, the Ward Melville Patriots, for every single sport that they play, too. And maybe it was some kind of copyright infringement thing that made them change the name at Stony Brook. I don't know what the story is. I really don't know. I do know that Hofstra, their team used to be called something that was offensive to somebody, right? Was it to Native Americans or to Irish people? Was it the Fighting Irish? It was some crazy name that they had to change, and they changed it to Pride, which is a silly name, I think. It's just a silly name for a team, the Hofstra Pride. I don't know. I think it sounds kind of silly. Sort of like when the North American Soccer League introduced a team called the Chicago Fire back in the 70s. I thought that was kind of silly, too. Oh, but my idea. Okay, I've gone way off base. My idea is to have the Stony Brook Seawolves, the basketball team, play the New York Nets. Because the New York Nets are setting records for being the worst team ever. And wouldn't it be great if our team here could beat them? And I think I could round up some people here at the radio station. We could beat them. Yeah, I think, They set the record. They set the NBA record for worst start ever. They lost something like 18 games in a row. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. But I do know this. The record that they really need to try to beat is that of the Philadelphia 76ers back in 1973. Who finished with a 9-73 record, the worst ever. And I remember things like this because, you know, it's a single digit in the win column for the whole season, 9-73. Oh my God, how embarrassing that must have been. But yeah, that's my idea. Why not? Let's challenge them. And if they refuse, it's because they're scared. Simple as that. So yeah, we have a basketball game tonight. Fordham's going to see what Stony Brook can do. And, you know, there's other sports news. I don't want to spend the whole time or even a few minutes on sports, but it has been in the news this week, especially with regard to Hofstra. I don't know if you heard about this. It was national news that Hofstra has dropped their football program. Yeah, they can't do it anymore. It's not that they don't have players. They have players. They just can't afford to pay to run the program. It does cost money. And, you know, it makes a lot of people think, okay, you know, the purpose of the university really is to teach people, right? I mean, that's sort of what I think it is. So this is an unfortunate decision, I guess, for some people, but it shouldn't be as major a deal as what I'm hearing everywhere. I mean, if they eliminated a department, the English department, for instance, do you think it would be a national news that Hofstra got rid of their academics? Probably wouldn't be. But football, wow, that's a big deal. You know, it is a big deal for some of those schools down south that have 100,000-seat stadiums in the middle of campus, but I don't think Hofstra was ever one of those. But, yeah, that's the unfortunate news from Nassau County, our neighbors to the west. Another one of these questions I was just asking myself, thinking out loud, but Stony Brook football did quite well this year, from what I understand. They won a good position in the Big South Conference. Now, you know, no one's answering this question. We're in New York, you know, we're on Long Island. Why are we playing in the Big South? Why do we win in the Big? We should be winning in the North, shouldn't we? Someone could please explain that to me. I know I don't get it. I don't understand the nicknames. I don't understand the geography. I don't understand the sport. But it is fun to follow some of the crazy things that go on. World Cup seedings, not seedings, but the draw took place last week. And, boy, North Korea really got the shaft. what basically this means is there were 32 teams, and they divided the 32 teams up into four different divisions. They called them pots. And what they do is they put teams from one part of the world in one pot, and they put teams that are really, really good in a particular pot, along with the host team. And what they do is they pick one from each pot to be in a group that will be playing in the World Cup next June in South Africa. So this way you don't have two really good teams, like, say, Germany and Brazil, in the same initial group. They're both in Pot A, which I think has eight teams. Eight times four is 32, right? Yeah, okay, so there's eight teams in Pot A, and those are all the really good teams. And they take one of those teams, and they put them in each of the eight groups. So it's pretty simple. It's kind of crazy, though, for us here in America. We don't usually do things like this. Actually, I said eight good teams. There's really seven good teams and South Africa being the host. And they like for the host to make it to the second round, so they don't put them in with a really good team either. That's sort of how that works. Anyway, to make a long story really short, North Korea wound up in the group of death. There's always one of them. And that's a group that has a lot of really good teams in it. And those teams are Brazil and Portugal. And just for good measure, they threw in the Ivory Coast. So it's Brazil, Portugal, the Ivory Coast, and North Korea. Now, Ivory Coast is supposed to be the best team in in Africa, in the continent of Africa. So it doesn't look good for North Korea for next June going through in the World Cup. But it is good for them insofar as getting a lot of attention, because they'll be playing these teams that are world powers. And everybody will be watching and saying, wow, look at those guys go. They just don't know when to give up, do they? So in case you're following the United States, the United States got a pretty easy go of it. They're in Group C with England, and that's really their toughest opponent. Also, Algeria and Slovenia. That's who we have to worry about come next June. And like I said, there's eight groups. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and H, each with four teams. It'll be interesting. I just like following these things, you know, following global events such as the World Cup, which happens every 4 years. Another global event, which happens a lot less frequently, and thank you. Thank you, by the way, CD player number four. You're the only one I trust. You really are. You played the entire theme. Thank you. Without skipping, without stopping, without spitting it out in disgust. Thank you very much. CD4, everybody. CD1 and CD2, I don't know. The other major global event is what's happening in Copenhagen, and that, of course, is the climate summit. Now, it's simply incredible to me how this has been derailed so much, especially in this country, by... How do I say this nicely? By the morons, and I did say that nicely, believe me, compared to what I wanted to say, the morons who simply will not in any way be willing to even consider the possibility that maybe, just maybe, pollution is bad and that we're doing something harmful to the planet. You know, all these people saying that that global warming is fantasy. And when I say all these people, it's really not that many people. It's basically they're using the tactics of the right as usual, speaking loudly, speaking in many places, and making everybody else stop what they're doing to pay attention to them. And so in that way, they give the impression that there are so many more of them that they actually have logic and reason on their side, when in actuality, they're just a bunch of ignorant loudmouths. And again, I'm being very nice. Now, you might have heard about this thing, which is being called Climategate. Climategate. I like it. I like the title. It's kind of funny. Basically, what it was, or what it is, revolved around the series of emails that were, quote-unquote, hacked into. And, you know, I take exception to that phrase used in that particular way. Basically, somebody was able to get into a computer system and read somebody's mail that they weren't supposed to read. I don't know if you consider that hacking. I mean, if you figure out how to get into something and you spend hours, you know, figuring out the weaknesses and systems and trying things over and over again until you finally get success. Yeah, that is hacking. But In this particular case, I think it was somebody guessing a password or somebody else just looking over someone's shoulder. Various low-tech ways of doing things. The upshot of it is they were able to read some emails from the University of East Anglia over in the UK and basically see what scientists were saying amongst themselves. And some of the things that the scientists were saying amongst themselves seemed to be not exactly flattering to the opposition, suggesting that certain bits of information not be made public because it might make somebody else look good, words to that effect. And what this has turned into by the proponents of global warming, I don't know what else to call them, the pro-pollution people, I can't wrap my head around why somebody would say the efforts to introduce green technology, to rely less on fossil fuels, to drive less and to drive more efficient cars when we do drive, why any of that is considered a negative thing. But yet these people will come out and say it's all a farce, you're all being led around by the nose, and global warming is a big conspiracy. Well, this particular revelation was able to feed into those claims and get a whole lot more people to sign on to them. And it's really kind of, it's funny, but it's also sad to see this kind of thing happen. Because people are very gullible. So basically what happened was these emails were intercepted and publicized. And basically it was scientists acting a little childish, maybe. At worst, I think that's what it was. Anyway, I'd like to read some of the reactions to that incident from the climatologists, which is what the people studying the climate are called. And by the way, I don't know if you've noticed this, but it's referred to less as global warming and more as climate change. And the reason for that is people really have a hard time, some people that is, really have a hard time understanding how the overall climate can be increasing, the temperature can be increasing when it gets cold sometimes. You know, it's winter now. It might even snow here tonight. How could global warming be possible then? Or if you get a particularly harsh winter, well, there's proof. The planet's not getting warmer, it's getting colder. Yeah, you know, it's like lock somebody in a freezer and tell them that's the proof they need that global warming doesn't exist. It's the same basic concept. You know, obviously it's not so simplistic that everything is going to get warm at the same time, but overall, when you look at the averages and you add up all the numbers, there's definitely something going on. Anyway, let's look at some of these reactions. Researchers said in a statement that the emails have been taken out of context and merely reflected an honest exchange of ideas. Phil Jones, director of the Climactic, is that how he's supposed to say that? Climactic or climatic? Climatic, I think, right? Yeah. It's not like a climax. It's the climatic, okay. Director of the Climatic Research Unit called the charges that the emails involve any untoward activity ludicrous. Michael Mann, director of Pennsylvania State University's Earth System Science Center, who was among those implicated in the controversy, said that skeptics were taking these words totally out of context to make something trivial appear nefarious, and called the entire incident a careful, high-level orchestrated smear campaign to distract the public about the nature of the climate change problem. Kevin E. Trenberth of the National Center for Atmospheric Research said that he was appalled at the release of the emails, but thought that it might backfire against climate skeptics as the messages would show the integrity of scientists. He has also said that the theft may be aimed at undermining talks at the currently ongoing Copenhagen Global Climate Summit, which, you know, I really wish I was at. I've been watching reports of this. And it just seems like everybody is in such an upbeat mood. Like maybe this will be the time, you know, unlike Kyoto, maybe this will be a time where we actually do something positive. And you're just seeing all these people from all around the world congregating. How can that be a bad thing? You know, I saw a report on Euronews about this train that had left Brussels. And it was all decked out in all kinds of, I guess, artwork. Because they were going all the way from Brussels to Copenhagen on this one train. Every single car was painted on the outside. And all these people were just traveling activists, scientists, all sorts, to be a part of this. And what a piece of history. You know, this doesn't happen very often. Anyway, according to the University of East Anglia, the documents and emails have been selected deliberately to undermine the strong consensus that human activity is affecting the world's climate in ways that are potentially dangerous. The university said in a statement, "The selective publication of some stolen emails and other papers taken out of context is mischievous and cannot be considered a genuine attempt to engage with this issue in a responsible way." Thank you. I mean, that's exactly what I thought when I first saw excerpts of the emails, and very small excerpts, by the way. And the immediate reaction is, if, aha, this is proof that there's some global conspiracy. You know, I like to ask these people, what exactly is the purpose of this conspiracy? You know, there are these people that want us to use less oil and emit less pollutants into the air. All right, what's the evil part of that? What is it exactly that is the end goal here? Can't figure that part out. I don't think anybody can. Anyway, continuing here, Tom Wigley, a former director of the CRU and now head of the U.S. That's a climatic research unit, by the way, and now head of the U.S. National Center for Atmospheric Research, condemned the threats that he and other colleagues had received as truly stomach-turning and commented, "None of it affects the science one iota." Accusations of data, the fact that they can use a word like iota in a sentence, which is something that the opponents probably could never do in their wildest fantasies. Not that they even have those. Continuing here. Accusations of data distortion or faking are baseless. I can rebut and explain all of the apparently incriminating emails that I have looked at, but it is going to be very time-consuming to do so. And I think that's what they want. They want to waste time. That's what they're doing. Wasting time, wasting my time, wasting your time by even discussing this. But, you know, it's valuable to look at how particular people managed to use the system to get attention, to waste everybody's time. You see that every day in very many different ways. The author and climatologist David Ree of the University of Edinburgh noted that the CRU is just one of many climate research institutes that provide the underlying scientific basis for climate policy at national and international levels. The conspiracy theorists may be having a field day, but if they really knew academia, they would also know that every published paper and data set is continually put through the ringer by other independent research groups. The information that makes it into the IPCC reports is some of the most rigorously tested and debated in any area of science. And I think that's the key. They don't understand how academia works. You know, they just don't get how these particular things are put forth in the first place. And what they go through to be tested, to be questioned. That's what science is. It's like people who say, well, because you call it the theory of evolution, that means it's not a fact. Not even understanding the meaning of the word theory in scientific terms. Continuing here, one of the IPCC's lead authors, Pierre Chumbert, okay, of the University of Chicago, expressed concern at the precedent established by the HAC. Hate using that word there, but all right, whatever. This is a criminal act of vandalism and of harassment of a group of scientists that are only going about their business doing science. It represents a whole new escalation in the war on climate scientists who are only trying to get at the truth. This illegal act of cyber terrorism against a climate scientist, and I don't think that's too strong a word, is ominous and frightening. What next? Deliberate monkeying with data on servers? Insertion of bugs into climate models? Or at the next level, since the forces of darkness have moved to illegal operations, will we all have to get bodyguards to do climate science? Okay, well, yeah, it's getting a little crazy out there. That's for sure. Climatologist James Hansen said that the controversy has no effect on the science, and that while some of the emails reflect poor judgment, the evidence for human-made climate change is overwhelming. The writers of the Real Climate blog, cited by Computer World magazine, expressed the view that what was not contained in the emails was the most interesting element. And this is important. There is no evidence of any worldwide conspiracy, no mention of George Soros nefariously funding climate research, no grand plan to get rid of the MWP, known as the Medieval Warm Period, no admission that global warming is a hoax, no evidence of the falsifying of data, and no marching orders from our socialist, communist, vegetarian overlords. You'd think if they really were able to read all the email, there'd be some mention of that somewhere, but no, nothing. Incredible. So, I'm sure you're going to be seeing all kinds of media reports about the fierce debate going on, but you know, that fierce debate really has already taken place in the scientific community. And if you want to waste time debating certain things that have already been pretty much proven, probably more than 99% of which is considered fact at this point. That's your call if you want to waste time doing that. But I think, you know, it's time we get on to more important things and actually accomplish something at this summit. And hopefully that's what's going to happen. You know, speaking of people polluting, wasting gas, being stupid, I would be remiss not to mention a particular SUV story of the week. I don't want to focus on SUVs too much this week. I spend too much time talking about things I see, but I saw this yesterday and I just had to mention it because otherwise I might forget about it. But I was driving down Route 25A, which is a two-lane road, one lane each direction, and right at the point where Nichols Road merges, Nichols Road being the road that goes right by the university, it's a four-lane highway, it dead ends at 25A and cars merge into the eastbound lane of 25A. And what happened was there was an SUV in front of me and an SUV was merging from Nichols Road. And I did what I usually do if I'm not in a bad mood. I ease up on the gas to give this person room to get in. And I think that's what most people tend to do. Well, apparently the guy in the SUV merging really wanted to be in front of the SUV that was in front of me. He saw the space that I was giving him, didn't want that, wanted the space in front of the other guy, which didn't exist. And so what do you think happened? The two of them got into a race. This guy's on the shoulder, the other guy's in the lane, and they're going about 45 miles an hour down the road. This guy refusing to let him in, the other guy refusing to give up and take the space in back of him. And they're probably both women, too, because I've noticed that I say guy all the time, but it's really split down the middle. So it could be anybody. Once you get behind the wheel of these things, you turn into an idiot. So, yeah, there they both were. And, you know, it's not funny. It's not funny because we've seen too many people get killed locally because of morons who don't know what they're doing. And this could easily have gone that way as well. And it was, you know what stopped it? What stopped it was another SUV, a third SUV, pulling out of a strip mall. And you know how they do that, how people who don't really care about anybody else, they just pull out a third of the way into the road and then look. So that's what this person did. And the person in the shoulder, of course, had to stop or crash into the other SUV and meet all kinds of cops and things like that. It's just insane. I see things like this almost every day, but the childishness and the stupidity is just something that we need to put some kind of handle on. Like, you know, I was okay, I'm not going to tell more stories, just this one, real quick. Driving into the city the other day, I was on the BQE, all right? And we all know the BQE, Brooklyn-Queens Expressway, also stands for Better Quickly Exit. You were basically standing still for long periods of time. That's what your experience on the BQE will be. And this was no exception. I was in the left lane because I wanted to get on the Williamsburg Bridge, and nobody was really moving. So the SUV in back of me starts flashing his lights at me, like, get out of my way. Like, why do you think that you have the right to go faster than somebody else who is simply not moving at all because the person in front of them is not moving? Do you expect every single person to get out of your way because you're big and you can flash your lights? And in that person's mind, yes, that is what's going on. This person thought they had the right to do that. And they got very angry when I refused to move. Not that I could move. It was a parking lot. Where do you go? You have to create space. Okay, that's it for SUVs. But I'm going to stick with stupidity for a second, if you don't mind. All right, stupid people everywhere, and now they see, you know, we were talking about Newsday in years past, months past, about how they opened up their webpage to any moron who wanted to comment and say all kinds of racially stupid or just generally stupid things on any single story. And they've improved their website tremendously. They now require people to register, and apparently that alone was enough to drive most of the idiots away. But CNN now seems to have put this policy into place of basically saying, well, you know, everyone's opinion is the same, so we're going to listen to what everybody has to say. So that's why today, if you might be reading a story about this being the 29th anniversary of John Lennon's assassination, you read a nice story about that, and then the comment you see right below it is, what a scumbag John Lennon was. I never liked him. You know, something stupid like that with absolutely no knowledge, no discussion, just a remark designed to get attention. Because that's what stupid people like to do. They like to waste our time and get attention. And so I'm looking at a story today about how a major storm is moving east across the United States. Yeah, in fact, like I said, we might get snow. Wouldn't that be something? We might get snow. Whole story about how people are battening down the hatches or whatever it is they do when winter is approaching. And they have comments on why do you need comments on a story about the weather? But they have comments open, and of course everybody comments, and you see gems like, I think it's damn funny, global warming exposed as made-up science and people still running around demanding radical action to combat a lie. If you're really concerned about your children's future, demand the government stop spending more than it makes. That is a real threat to future generations. And then there have always been cold winters, warm summers, cold summers, warmer winters. There's no such thing as global warming. You get all these people crawling out of the woodwork, given a forum, and being allowed now to basically get the same audience that a story written by somebody who did research is getting. I mean, I can't blame them. You know, if you're watching the Today Show, and then all of a sudden, after they interview the Prime Minister of Cambodia or something like that, they turn the camera to you in your living room, and you get to say something to the same audience that these people just spoke to. Well, who wouldn't take that opportunity? Yeah. So there's all these stupid remarks on every single story you can imagine now on the CNN website. And it's really pretty sad thing to see happen. Let's look at some listener mail, because I always like to do that. And we are quickly running out of time. Won't be taking phone calls tonight because, as I said, it's a shortened show. And that means we just don't have time. Rob T. Firefly from Off the Hook writes into Off the Wall. I don't know if that's a conflict of interest or something illegal there, but he did it anyway. And basically talking about what was going on in Africa. We were talking about albinos being hunted for their internal organs and things like that. Horrible story like that. He basically said albino is not the preferred nomenclature. It's more PC these days to refer to such people as albinistic or people with albinism. Is it albinism or albinism? Thank you, Rob, for that gem. Dan writes in to say, I hear you mention static on Off the Wall a lot, but I never hear it on the podcast. I don't know about the broadcast, of course, but maybe no one is hearing it but you. Maybe you should check your ears for electrical shorts. Well, Dan, I happen to know that the static is heard. Whenever I turn... Okay, let's try this now, all right? I'm not playing anything, though, so maybe it won't work, but let's see if we actually hear static when I'm turning the volume up on the CD player. Okay, I didn't hear anything that time. Let's try the other CD player. Okay, but it's not fair, because nothing's playing. It might be a connection with the CD player. Let me try this one. It might only happen when something is playing, and I've got nothing to play right now. But you know what? If anybody else wants to listen to the show last week, where I mention it while I'm trying to play the theme. I mention the static. I heard the static then, and that was on the podcast. So go ahead, listen. Listen to the high fidelity version, because maybe it doesn't come through on the low fidelity version. Not losing my mind, not yet. All right. And speaking of craziness in Africa, this story I just saw, and this is really something that's insane. But basically, there's a new bill proposed in Uganda that basically is an anti-homosexuality bill. In fact, that's what it's called, the anti-homosexuality bill. Get this. These are the provisions that human rights groups say would spur a witch hunt of homosexuals in the country. Gays and lesbians convicted of having gay sex would be sentenced at minimum to life in prison. Minimum. People who test positive for HIV may be executed. Homosexuals who have sex with a minor or engage in homosexual sex more than once may also receive the death penalty. The bill forbids the promotion of homosexuality, which in effect bans organizations working in HIV and AIDS prevention. Anyone who knows of homosexual activity taking place but does not report it would risk up to 3 years in prison. Yeah. Who will go to HIV testing if he knows that he will suffer the death sentence? Said Elizabeth Mataka, the UN Special Envoy on AIDS in Africa. The law will drive them away from seeking counseling and testing services. I could go on, but it's a sickening story, and this is something that, you know, in that country, 95% of the people are polled as being anti-gay. So it's very hard to reach people when they're that prejudiced, when they're that ignorant. And we face the same problems here, not to that extent, certainly, but we face the same extent, the same problems trying to reach people that don't want to listen, are very set in their ways, and that really just don't get it. And we saw an instance of that last week in New York, where the state senate defeated a bill that would have legalized same-sex marriage. It was the closest that the state has ever gotten, because the legislature had already passed, I'm sorry, the legislation already passed the state assembly, and Governor Patterson was going to sign it into law. All that had to happen was for the state senate to pass it, and they did not. And it's interesting, too, because if you watched the hearings, you saw all the people who were making statements, making speeches, were all the ones in favor of the bill. And all the people who had nothing to say for themselves were the ones not supporting it. Those are all the Republicans, too, by the way. Not one Republican supported this. But they had nothing to say. If you believe in something, why don't you speak up for it? Instead of just silently defeating something. How about telling us why you feel that way? Anyway, the battle of a gay marriage moves to New Jersey this week. A bill that would legalize same-sex marriage comes up for debate in the state's Senate Judiciary Committee. If the legislation passes through the panel, it could be voted on by the full Senate by the end of the week. The state assembly hasn't considered the bill yet. This is important, though, because there's a new Republican governor coming in January who has said that he would veto the bill. So if the bill passes before he moves into town, then New Jersey joins states like Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Hampshire, Vermont, and Iowa, not to mention the country of Canada. All right. Well, you know what? We're kind of out of time. I had so much more to talk about tonight. But, you know, it's an exciting world. A lot of things going on. And it's easy to fill up time talking about the various things that go on in our lives. We want to hear what goes on in your lives. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Next week, we have a full hour, and we'll be talking about all kinds of other things, and we'll take some phone calls as well. Tonight, I'd like to go out with a song that's a tribute. Today's December 8th, exactly 29 years after a horrible night where John Lennon was mowed down outside his apartment. And it's amazing to me. I've been listening to John Lennon music all day, actually,
because I remembered the date. Sometimes I forget the date, but today I remembered it. And I just was overcome by sadness listening to the music. And 29 years later, just to still feel the same sense of loss makes me wonder how much there could have been had this guy stuck around a bit longer and given his amazing comments and amazing music, all kinds of world events and local events and things like that. It makes you realize how much the little things in life actually do mean. Again, OTW at 2600.com. Here's John Lennon. Stay tuned for basketball. Good night.
Okay, start again, silly boy. Take four. Some forgotten dream. Seems like all I really was doing was waiting for you. Just like little girls and boys, I'd been in love before.